Sadhguru Vasudev, a realized yogi, mystic, and internationally renowned thought leader, is coming to Detroit to once again warm up the hearts of beloved Michiganders and to inspire them with his wisdom, wit, and piercing logic. Sadhguru will be offering refreshing and unique insights into many aspects of life, ranging from the mundane to the ultimate. With a keen mind, balanced by a heart that knows no boundary, his presence creates an extraordinary opportunity to break through limitations into one's natural state of freedom, love, and joy. A rare occasion to be in Sadhguru's presence and explore life's deepest questions. Enlivened with engaging discourses, guided meditations, and vibrant music by Sounds of Isha, this one-time event is an oasis for those thirsty for a life of exuberance and clarity. Make sure to save the date on your calendar for Sunday, November 1st, 2015. 1 p.m. is check-in and the event starts at 2 p.m. at Masonic Temple Theater at 500 Temple Street, Detroit, Michigan. For tickets, visit www.ishausa.org/Detroit. That's ishausa.org/Detroit. For more information, call 313-451-4742. That's 313-451-4742. Or email detroit@ishausa.org. That's ishausa.org. And now, please enjoy highlights from the In the Conversations with the Mystic series with Arianna Huffington and Sadhguru.
How important do you think it is for influential people such as yourselves to work together to create world peace? And how much of an impact can you have?
So obviously, you can look around at all the crises we're facing, many of them self-inflicted, and especially the ones in Washington at the moment. And you can think that it's hopeless, and what can one person do? And throughout history, it's always been individuals working by themselves, working together, who brought about fundamental change. And for me, my favorite sort of scientific concept is the concept of critical mass. You remember from physics 101, you know, you have to reach a certain level before something becomes self-sustaining. Well, in the same way, I think each one of us who contributes to that work for peace, that work for alleviating suffering, each one of us who does that is part of that critical mass. We don't know when we reach the tipping point, but we do know that each one of us is making a difference towards reaching that tipping point. And I have absolutely no doubt about that. I see it again and again. So that's why one thing I never feel is pessimistic, partly because I'm Greek and, you know, optimism is in our genes and in our DNA. Remember Zorba the Greek. But also because I think that ultimately the forces of life and the goodness and compassion will prevail. I have no doubt about that. It's just a question of can we accelerate that movement and reduce the suffering along the way.
So in our lives, if we do not do what we cannot do, is not a problem. But in our lives, if we do not do what we can do, we are a disaster. So we as a generation of people are in a unique space. For the first time, for the very first time in the history of humanity, we are sitting in a place where we have the necessary resource, capability and technology to address every issue on the planet. You name it, we have a solution. But are we going to make it happen or not is a big question for we as a generation of people. I would like to see that we are not looked upon by future generations as a vain generation which had all the possibilities and didn't do it. I would like to see that they look upon us as people who did everything that we could. So, in this whole effort, the media is a significant piece, very significant piece. And it's wonderful that just a segment is right now good news. We would like to see that, create a world where there is nothing else to report than other than good things. But it is… I'm not a dreamy type, I'm very pragmatic about everything we do. But at the same time, I would like to say this. See, this happened in the year 1998. A certain experts from United Nations visited southern India and they made a prediction. This part of southern India, which is called as Tamil Nadu, they made a prediction, by 2025, 60% of Tamil Nadu will be a desert. I don't like predictions, you know, I don't like horoscopes. Because predictions are made on cold statistics, predictions never take into account what is beating in individual human hearts, the aspirations of the people. Statistics cannot capture, you know. So I wanted to check for myself and I drove across this region in South India to find out if it's true. Then I found that it's not true because in my estimate, it would not go till 2025. It would be much sooner because in 15 years' time, 3 perennial rivers had gone dry and water table had sunk from 150 feet to 1200 feet. So I was just thinking what to do. Then we made a barefoot calculation because the national aspiration in India is to have 33% green cover. But this state had only 16.5% green cover. So I made a barefoot calculation, if you plant 114 million trees in the next 8 to 10 years, in 15 to 20 years you will have 33% green cover, and that's a real answer for maintaining the land. So I called about 3,000 to 4,000 volunteers and I told them, we need to plant 114 million trees. Their eyeballs rolled and said, "Sadhguru, do you know what is 114 million? Do you know how many zeros?"
They wouldn't be able… they would have had no time to get any sleep at all.
No, we're working for people's enlightenment, you need a tree to sit under, you know.
Actually, it's a very good place to have a nap.
So, 114 million looked like an impossible number in everybody's mind. So I just asked them, what is the population of this region? They said, 62 million. I said, if all of us plant one tree today, nurture it for 2 years and plant one more, what's the number? You have the number right there. Everybody, every one of us is capable of planting one. All it takes is you have to convince everybody. In the last 9 years now, 8.5, 9 years, I myself personally have planted only a little over 100 trees with my own hands. But today we've planted 17 million trees. And in the whole of Asia, this is the only region where the green cover is actually going up. In 8 years, the green cover has gone up by 7.2%, according to government statistics. According to Google Maps, it's gone up over 10%. This… we've not given up our life to do this. This is just a small part of our life, because to plant one tree, it doesn't take a life. And to nurture one tree, it doesn't take a life. It's just that we have to convince a large number of people to do it. And this is not been done by some environmentalists or scientists or government agencies. This is just done by ordinary people, simple people. School children have planted over 2.5 million trees in the last 4 years, and they're taking care of it. Because we don't allow anybody to plant more than 2 trees. You plant 100 and forget about it, that's not the point. You plant only 2 and you take care of it. and 17 million living trees has happened just on the side. This is not our main job, this is just one small thing. Why I'm saying this is, the media pitched in big time. The local media, when I spoke to the people and they heard what I said, I went to the local farmers and told them, you have to convert 10% of your land into trees, more food should come out of trees. They said, what is this all about? They don't know what is global warming, climatic problems, they're just struggling for day-to-day life. So I made them sit under a tree and just made them understand, see what you exhale, the tree is inhaling right now. What the tree exhales, you're inhaling right now. This is a relationship that you can't break. You can live without anybody, but not without a tree.
That's definitely going in the good news section. That's
no.
That's a lot of trees.
I want to particularly congratulate the media, because the media took it up in a big way. They saw this as a possibility and took it up, and across the place, today we have over 1300 nurseries in the state, you know, plant nurseries, where if any tree that we planted dries up or dies, within 15 days it will be replaced by the volunteers in the area. But this happened because media cooperated really good. If that didn't happen, we wouldn't have reached the number of people that we reached, we couldn't have inspired the number of people we inspired, and so many people wouldn't have taken it up.
Each one of us needs to be able to examine ourselves and see where are we at. I mean, I've been meditating for many, many years, and that's a very important ritual for me. I love naps. In fact, I have instituted 2 nap rooms in our newsroom, and so people can go and have a nap in the middle of the afternoon. They can have 15, 20 minutes to recharge. But I think that's where this is very individual. Each person, it would be, imagine, it would be a disaster if people think because Sadhguru can sleep for 2 hours, I should be able to do that too, because then you can probably drive yourself into the ground and get really sick. But if we are connected with ourselves, we will know what works for us. And then you find out what works for each one of you. I mean, what works for me will be different than what works for you, what works for any human being there. But I know for me, my cocktail includes adequate sleep, meditation, my yoga, my walking and hiking that I love, wherever I can get the mountain, I love to hike on it.
You should try my yoga, sleep will come down.
Okay, I'll try your yoga. I'm willing. I love to try anything, so I would definitely love to try your yoga. And then discover what is it in each of our lives that creates a state of mind and a state of being from which we can be most creative, most loving, most compassionate, and most effective. For we all know those feelings, and we know when we're just kind of like zombies walking through the day, getting tasks done without joy and real creativity. And most people at the moment seem to be suffering from what has been described as time famine. They're constantly feeling that they're running out of time. We had a beautiful blog post in our parents section from a mother who wrote a piece that went insanely viral about the day she stopped saying hurry up to her child. She realized that the two words she said most often to her 6-year-old were hurry up and have your breakfast, hurry up and go to school, hurry up and have your dinner, hurry up and go to bed. And she wrote very movingly about the moment she realized, what am I doing to my child? And the piece has been read by 7 million people. It's got over 1 million likes on Facebook because it really resonated with something in all of us that feels we're doing that to ourselves too. We're telling ourselves, hurry up, It's like we're running out of time, everything being done breathlessly. And if we can change that, it helps bring that state of peace that ultimately is going to affect the whole world. I mean, one of the quotes that has stayed with me all my life was by Alexander Solzhenitsyn in one of his novels, when he said, if you wanted to change the world, who would you begin with, yourself or others? And we all want to begin with others because it's kind of easier. You know, we can just tell them what to do, we can judge them. And it's harder to be on this journey of changing ourselves.
It's not the question of wanting to change ourselves into something, because if you say, I want to change myself, what do I change myself into? You set up some values and morals and ethics and whatever else. All these things are substitutes that we have found for an effervescent humanity within ourselves. We don't have to try to change ourselves, we are human. If we give it the necessary ambience, both inward and outward, a human being will become a full-fledged human being. See, if an apple tree is here, you don't have to every day tell the apple tree, please produce sweetness, don't produce bitterness, this is not needed. If you just provide the necessary ambience, it will generate sweetness. So, providing that ambience outside is a challenge, because then you'll have to change the world, which doesn't happen in a day. But changing the inner ambience, if you're willing, it's right now. So if you change the inner ambience, this human being becomes in a certain way. There's a whole technology as to how to bring this forth, not just by changing attitudes, because see, right now today there's a storm. For us it may be rain or mist or something, but in reality the chemistry of the place has changed. We experience as a downpour, but essentially the chemistry of the atmosphere has changed. Similarly, for every human experience, there is a chemical basis. We're talking about a technology with which you can create a chemistry of blissfulness. And when you're blissful, if I meet anybody, if you meet anybody, when they're really blissful, they are definitely wonderful people, no question. But if you meet the same person when he is miserable, he could be nasty, you know. This is true with every human being. You know, like we've… for the last 18 years, we've been working in the prisons in South India, and we also did a little bit of work in United States. Today our programs are mandatory in the prisons in Southern India. People keep asking me, Sadhguru, why are you spending so much time with these criminals? We are all waiting, you're not available. See, as far as I'm concerned, I don't see any criminals. All I see is every human being is in pursuit of his happiness. The man that you call as a criminal, also in pursuit of his happiness, but he's pursuing it far more vigorously than you. In pursuit of your happiness, you're willing to stand in the line, but he wants to jump the line. That's what becomes a crime. But the important thing is, he's in pursuit of happiness far more vigorously than you. Why is he pursuing it so vigorously? If he was feeling blissed out right now, would he jump the queue? Would he do something else? He would not. Right now, the sense of unpleasantness within you is such, unless you get what you want to get, you will not feel pleasant for a moment. For that moment of pleasantness, you are willing to do all kinds of things. So, my experience with these people, if you look at their history sheets, they have done terrible things. If you let them out tomorrow morning, I believe at least 50% of them will do the same thing once again. At least 50%. The other 50% might have changed, and they have. But when I'm with them in the prison, they're absolutely marvelous people, because if you keep them happy, if you keep any human being happy and pleasant within himself, you will see he will be truly wonderful in that moment. But the moment he feels unpleasant within himself, he will do all kinds of things. So in our effort to create a world that we want, There is no such thing as world, there's just you and me. If you and me are peaceful, the world is peaceful. If you and me are blissful, the world is blissful. But nobody seems to have the patience to work one human being at a time because it's a lifelong commitment. But we want to do just one day slogan and forget about it. It's never going to work like that, it'll remain a slogan forever. If we really want peace, if you really want to create the kind of world that we want, we have to work with individual people. There is no other way to do it.
If we have more women leaders, would we have a more peaceful world?
I actually think that right now women have a big responsibility to lead a lot of the transformation that's happening around how we define success, how do we define work, because basically the world as it is now has been designed by men and it's not working. There are a few good men who are very necessary. But if you think of it, you know, we had the first women's revolution, which was women getting the vote. The second women's revolution, which was led by Betty Friedan in the States and Gloria Steinem, which is basically having access to every job at equal pay, every position at the top of every field. And now I think there is a third women's revolution, which is redefining what success and work are. So instead of simply saying, I want to be at the top with you where you are, just saying, is this really the best way to run a business? Is this the best way to run our world? And women are saying no. Many, many women are saying we need to actually change the corporate structure in which we are competing, change the political world in which we are competing, not just compete on the terms that men created. And you know what? When these changes happen, and they are happening, men are going to be incredibly grateful.
In the making of life, in the very nature in which we are, there is something called as masculine and feminine. Unfortunately, we have created a world where our idea of success and well-being is overwhelmingly masculine. You must understand, I'm not talking about male and female, I'm talking about masculine and feminine. A man is capable of being as feminine as he wishes to be in terms of his thought, in terms of his emotion, when he wishes to be. Similarly, a woman is as capable as a man to be as masculine as she wishes when the situation demands or when such actions are needed. Right now we have created education systems which are purely masculine, which is producing women also. Whether you like it or not, unfortunately, the idea of success has become masculine. Those who want to be successful, even if they're women, they're becoming like this, which is a serious damage to humanity. If you take away the feminine from the world, everything that's gentle, everything that's beautiful, everything that's aesthetic, everything that is the subtler aspect of life will disappear, and only providing and survival aspect of life will exist. Right now, there is a serious concern about this. See, 25 years ago, in a normal conversation, nobody would think it's worthwhile discussing economy, isn't it? We talked about the weather, we talked about juicy things in the town. We never talked about the economy. Today in every conversation, everybody is talking about the economy. Economy means livelihood. Economy means providing. This is purely masculine in nature. I'm not saying women cannot provide, I'm not meaning men and women, I'm talking about masculine and feminine. If you make the society so overwhelmingly masculine, you will obliterate the feminine. In this, everything that's gentle and beautiful will vanish, even in a woman. Because when you set the standards that this is the only way you can succeed, even she will adapt to the situation, which I feel they are adapting, and many women are expressing their masculinity much more stronger and cruder than a man. It is happening. This is distressing because, if I'm allowed to share something from my life, you know, those days when we were growing up, my father is a physician, he is the provider. My mother never earned a rupee in her life, but it was never such a thing that if she does not earn, she's something less. No, she was the most valued person. As a child, when I look back and see, with all due respect, when I look back and see in the way my life evolved, I could very easily live without my father, but I cannot imagine my life without my mother. She never earned anything, but that's not the point. Where the money came from didn't make a difference, but how it was done in the home was everything. I must tell you this simple things. She did everything in the house, from stitching to embroidering to cooking to everything, because she wouldn't want anybody else to do it for her husband and children. She wants to do it herself. If we traveled somewhere, if we have to sleep, if she saw an empty pillowcase, you know, when you travel somewhere else, there's just white pillowcases, she would say, how can children sleep on empty pillowcases? And she would pull out her needle and thread right there. In 5 minutes, she stitched a small little parrot or a flower. This little green parrot, I stared and I slept. It is so deep in my consciousness today, that little green parrot, because that sense of that caring, I think that little green parrot sank so deep into me, and in many ways who I am today is a manifestation of that little green parrot that she stitched on that pillowcase. So, this is feminine. I'm not saying everybody has to embroider, but I'm saying that sense, that sense of concern is feminine, and this needs to happen. In the system of yoga, when you… you know, the hatha yoga is a common word being used everywhere without knowing the meaning generally. Hatha means… ha means sun, ta means moon. That means balancing the masculine and the feminine within yourself. Only when these two things are properly balanced within you, you are a full-fledged human being, otherwise you're a lopsided human being. The Adi Yogi, who is the originator of yoga, I know in California you think it's Madonna who did it. Adi Yogi is symbolized as the ultimate symbol of man. And how he is symbolized is, all the images are, one half of him is woman, another half is man. He is the ultimate man, but one half is woman, another half is man, because a true human being is an equal balance between masculine and feminine. And in workplaces, I don't see why gender should even be an issue. Why should you always look at somebody as a man or a woman? You can just look at them as a human being or as a piece of life.
What do you think is the role of the mass media in promoting peace? So I'd really like to know your point of view of that, and if Sadhguru can contribute to that as well, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, actually, that's a very important question, because I feel that the media have not done a good enough job of focusing on all that is happening around the world that is positive and that is working. Obviously, we're going to cover the crisis, the, you know, the violence, the dysfunctionality, the corruption. But we've made a big point of also covering what is working. So we have dedicated sections that are called What is Working? What is working in creating jobs? What is working in health? And by putting the spotlight on what is working, we can help scale it. Because it helps people see where they may want to join and put their own energies. It helps them see that it's not all despair and hopelessness, which is one of the worst things we can do to ourselves. And we have a section, for example, which is just dedicated to good news. It's called our good news section. And if you ever feel depressed, which I'm sure you never do if you're doing Sadhguru's yoga every day. But if you ever feel depressed, go to the good news section, because it really lifts your spirits and it connects you with all the positive ways in which you can lead your life and make a difference in the world.
Today, the media is like never before in terms of its reach. Anything that happens anywhere can reach every human being on the planet, which is a phenomenal power to influence people. As Ariana said, definitely that power has not been exercised in a most responsible manner. When we say media, let us not just take the press or the television. There is cinema, there is other ways of internet media, and of course, I don't know if video games come under media. But,
well, now everybody's on the internet, yeah. Even old-fashioned newspapers and magazines and TVs.
So when such reach is there, I think they could do tremendous things in future. Till now, I think largely like children who found access to something, we've been excited about doing something, not bothering about what it does to people. I think a time has come that our excitement levels can be brought down and we can see what is the impact we are having on people, whether it's positive or negative, and accordingly adjust this. Particularly cinema and these other forms which are continuously promoting violence and expecting people to be peaceful. Somebody even has the gall to say, this is cathartic, otherwise people would be violent on the street, let them watch it in the cinema and it'll be over. That is not the truth. It is inspiring people to do things. We can't blame it everything on somebody for what we do, of course. But still young minds are influenced by these things. I think a more responsible way of exercising this, because it reaches the whole world. You do not even know what all people it is reaching across the planet. When such a power is there, I feel it should be exercised sensibly. It's wonderful that you have a good news section. Actually, in India, in a major newspaper which sells over 2 million or 2.5 million newspapers today per day, physical newspapers, I convinced them to bring in a good news section about 15 years ago, but that good news section initially got that much space, then got that much space, and then got that much space, and in about 3.5 years it just vanished. Not that good things are not happening, it's just that somehow the ugly things sell, the good things don't sell. So this is a cultivation of the audience also is important. Somebody's not going to print something if nobody's going to read it. Somebody's not going to make a movie if nobody's going to watch it. Cultivation of the audience, there are school teachers and others and parents. I think we need to cultivate this from a young age, that good is really good. Bad looks good for a day, but it is not good when it happens to you. It looks nice in the cinema, somebody shooting somebody, but when you're shot at, it's not a very great feeling to be shot at.
But also, you know, it's… We've discovered that it's not true that good news don't sell. Our good news section has a wait list for sponsors who want to sponsor it. The traffic is one of the highest traffic sites on the Huffington Post. I think
I would like you to introduce to the newspaper
owners
in India.
Yeah, I would love to talk to them. We are going to launch the Huffington Post in India, and we're going to have a very big good news section. And also, another point to your question is that we no longer have just big media companies having the power to communicate. That the internet has changed that. You have the power to communicate. The mother that I mentioned who wrote a blog reached millions of people. That's what has changed now. While in the past that wasn't available, you had to kind of own the printing presses or have influence. Right now, anybody who has something interesting to say and can say it in a compelling way or in a humorous way, because humor is fantastic online, can reach a very large audience and have an impact.
That is a very positive and a fantastic change, that you don't have to wait for somebody to sell a newspaper to you. You can write and put it whatever you want, and even that needs a certain evolution. And people who feel responsible for what's happening around us should change that.
We hope you enjoyed the discussion between Sadhguru and Arianna Huffington, and we invite you to visit us at Isha Institute of Inner Sciences. Nestled on a breathtaking mountaintop in the beautiful Cumberland Plateau of Tennessee, Isha Institute of Inner Sciences is established as an infrastructure for raising human consciousness and fostering global harmony through individual transformation. The Institute offers a variety of programs that provide methods for anyone to attain physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. It is a unique space created for human beings to deepen their experience of life and to reach their ultimate potential. Isha Institute of Inner Sciences has been established as an essential resource for seekers wishing to explore the ancient science of yoga in all its depth and dimensions for many generations to come. Isha Institute of Inner Sciences is open 365 days a year and welcomes visitors from all walks of life. Go to www.ishausa.org. That's ISHAUSA.org, or call 931-668-1900 to schedule a visit or register for the next yoga and meditation event.